You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Big Suey. A podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Arr, matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
Throughout his career, I always found this guy interesting. He was somebody that was a talker and had a little bit of personality in a game that tends to scrub that out a little bit. And I've been fascinated to watch what he's done post-career, where he's poured himself into some creative projects, a documentary where he felt, felt the need, but we'll ask him about this, to tell you his story from beginning to end in a way that was vulnerable. CeCe Sabathia has a clothing line we'll tell you about in a second. But you remember him as a powerhouse ace across a decade, a guy you wanted pitching in big games. CeCe, thank you for joining us. I am curious, why have you decided to reveal so much of your life to us post-career?
You know what? When we were doing the filming, I guess, of the doc, I was just wanting to film, you know, 3,000 strikeouts. I had 250 wins coming up, and I thought it'd be cool to be able to, like, have some of those moments. I had a lot of my family traveling around. This is my last year, and we got halfway through the season, and I was like, man, this could be a pretty cool documentary. I told my wife, if I tell my whole story, you know, everything I went through, obviously never went into depth about me going to rehab in 2015, and, you know, just felt like it was the perfect time to be able to tell that story while we were capturing all this footage. So you can't really tell the end of the story without, you know, telling the whole thing. So that kind of inspired, you know, us to do the documentary. HBO picked it up and, you know, put their spin on it. And, you know, obviously they make things look really nice and, you know, do a good job of telling the story. So I was happy that they picked it up. And I think it makes for a great documentary.
How uncomfortable was that transparency?
It wasn't at all, just because I am a talker, like you said at the top of this, and you know, if there's anything going on with me, I always tell everybody and want everybody to know. So the people that are close to me kind of knew my story, but, you know, I just wanted to be able to get it all out there. And like I said, you know, filming some of those cool moments in 2019, you know, I just thought it made sense to tell the whole story.
What do you identify as the landmarks that have shaped the man sitting in front of us today?
I mean, there's a few. I mean, obviously, you know, you see in the doc me and my father's relationship, but me and my grandmother's relationship too. In my early childhood, growing up, you know, I was raised by her. Basically, she was, you know, my mom, and my mom was kind of like my big sister. So, you know, I think, you know, having that family love in such a tough environment where I grew up, enabled me to be able to sit here and push through, you know, all those difficult times.
So what do you make now, right? Because you weren't afraid on your platform to speak your thoughts. What do you make of what's happening in America over the last year where the athlete is being demanded to get into this fight in some ways?
I think it's good. And to be honest, I don't know if they're being demanded. I think it's just easier for them to speak their minds and use their voices. Obviously in baseball now we have this, you know, this group, the Players Alliance, is made up of 150 former and current black players. And it just gives guys an avenue to be able to, you know, express themselves. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, athletes, you know, are always told just to stick to what they know. And that's, you know, being out on the field. But, you know, we're affected by a lot of these things that go on in America, and be able to use our voice. It feels good, I think, for a lot. This new generation is, you know, they're not scared, and I think it's a lot of fun.
So let's ask you some sports questions. Who's a guy who made you a little uncomfortable getting in the box against you?
Man, nobody.
Never. So
really?
there was nobody that you faced any. There was not a right-handed hitter. I mean, you got Cabrera, you got Manny Ramirez. I know you guys like the challenges of that.
You can look up the numbers. There are guys that killed me. Manny killed me. You know, Evan Longoria killed me. But every time they got in the box, I thought I was going to get them out. So there wasn't anybody. I mean, I faced Barry Bonds in the All-Star game, and that was a big deal just because I grew up in the Bay and, you know, knowing, you know, how great he was. But other than that, no, I mean, I thought I was going to get everybody out.
Your career, though, still exceeded your expectations, did it not?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I mean, 1,000%. I mean, I wasn't ever supposed to make it out of Vallejo. So to pitch one game in the big leagues was a big deal for me. But still, when I was out there, I always thought I was the best.
Is there a time during your career where you won with garbage, like just garbage? You went out there and you're like, I don't have anything. This is going to be, I have my confidence and nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. I mean, especially towards the end of my career, when I was only throwing, you know, 86 to 88 with a little cutter, backdoor slider, there would be days where I'd be like, man, I mean, we just going to have to make some stuff up, and just try to get some outs, just try to figure some things out. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the art of being a starting pitcher is going out there when you don't have anything and just winging it and being able to keep your team close.
Do you remember sort of how it happened, though, the aging process on your arm, where you went from somebody who was throwing in the high 90s and an overpowering pitcher to all of a sudden, wait, I've got to be crafty now?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the last game where I felt like I was a power pitcher was ALDS game 5 against Baltimore, 2012. I threw a complete game. I had pitched, you know, five days earlier, game 1, I threw a complete game. And then game 5, I threw a complete game. But then I went out there game 4 against the Tigers, and I was what I was at the end of my career. My fastball was 88. Like, I just, you know, that from that day forward to the end of my career, it was me trying to figure out, you know, how to get out. But, yeah, that last game against Baltimore, I really was really my last game as a power pitcher.
So was it like Johan Santana, where the way you were used in the postseason, because you were a horse arm and because the science now shows us don't use guys that way, ever, don't use them that way, was your body broken by the experience of being clutch ace who wants the ball every circumstance, 3 days, rest, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess so. But you know, that's what I was there to do. I was 32 years old at the time. I had some bone spurs in my elbow that we didn't know about that I had surgery on after the season. And I never really just recovered or healed, but I mean, I wouldn't take it back. You know, that was, you know, the times, and that's what you were supposed to do as the ace, is go out there every third day, every fifth day, whenever they want you to take the ball and give your team the best chance to win.
What do you make of that science nonsense? Like, you have to pry the ball out of CC's hands in a big spot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I get it, you know, trying to keep guys healthy. But, yeah, you know, I look at a guy like Lucas Giolito the other night, and, you know, he's facing off with Shane Bieber. It's the first time he went in the seventh inning in a couple of years. So, you know, you got a team in the White Sox that are trying to win the World Series, and their ace, you know, hasn't pitched deep in the game. So we got to see how that's going to play out.
So you must marvel at the way the game has changed, though, the way that the specifics of pitching have changed.
Yeah, I mean, they changed throughout my career. You know, even from, you know, the time I came out in 2001 to the time I ended in 2019, it was a completely different game. You know, it was openers and, you know, different things going on. And, you know, the analytics show, you know, guys, they want guys to throw, you know, their best pitch, you know, 80, 90% of the time. Well, towards the end of my career, my backdoor slider is my best pitch. I can't throw that, you know, 70 times a game. You know, I got to figure out the best time to get in those situations where I can throw my backdoor slider. So I think that's kind of missing a little bit with the analytics, is trying to show these guys how to figure out to get to their best pitch.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do you think that Jeter could exist today, that baseball can birth a player who has sort of a iconic status with America because he wears a certain uniform and plays a certain position for a certain team? Can today's baseball even make that?
I think so. I mean, I think if you look at Mookie Betts, he's kind of on that. He's the Jeter of this time, right? I mean, he's not playing in one uniform, but he's winning in iconic uniforms. You know, he's got two in Boston and one as a Dodger when they haven't won since 1988. So, I mean, just looking at the way he plays the game, he plays hard. You know, he's an all-around player. He can do everything on the field. I think he's one of those guys that you kind of look at and you can point at him as this generation's Derek Jeter.
Oh, but CC, you're talking as someone who loves baseball. Jeter, it didn't matter. Jeter transcended. Yes, Mookie Betts.
Jeter was the biggest star in sports.
Mookie Betts is indisputably great, and he can walk into a grocery store in most places in the country, and people wouldn't be like, hey, there's Mookie Betts, where they would be doing that with Jeter.
Is there a baseball player, though, just in today's time, in 2021, that can be that big? You know what I mean? Like, because there are other sports where the NBA is taking over, the NFL. I mean, is it just America? Is there a baseball player that can be that big? Does it have to be a Yankee? You know what I'm saying? Like, can you name a guy that can be that transcending?
I don't think it can be done is what I'm saying. I think the sport has gotten so slow and has become so regional that even a monster Yankee like Aaron Judge, who is indisputably somebody who would be a superstar at any time in baseball, is not a monster superstar across sports. I don't think your sport can make guys like even you anymore, CC.
I think if Judge wins, I think we see him a lot more as a national superstar. I think you can put him in a lot more commercials. I think, you know, you get him in the Canyon of Heroes down there on a float, you know, that makes for a great commercial. So I think it has to be a Yankee to be that transcending guy like that you're talking about, that the biggest guy in sports.
Was there anything or much about playing in New York that you did not like?
No, I mean, the only thing that I didn't like was shaving every couple of days, but the rest of it was great. I love everything about being a Yankee. I love everything about the tradition. I love everything about the city. I love the fans. No, I mean, and I couldn't have said that coming in here in 2008. I didn't know what the experience was going to be like. Being from the West Coast, I wasn't super excited to come play in New York. I didn't know much about it. All I knew was the fans were tough, and you know, the clubhouse was supposed to be messed up. But I got here and it was, you know, brand new stadium, me and Swish, and AJ came in, and, you know, the Steinbrenner family, Yankee family, treated my family like family. So it's been a great experience. I mean, I've loved every minute of it.
Is there any great untold story about teams trying to vie for your services as part of that playoff run? Like, could it have been different where CC had ended up by happenstance somewhere other than the Yankees along the path, or somewhere other than traded to Milwaukee? Is there a great untold story about a transaction involving you?
No, I mean, the only thing is I probably would have came to the Yankees instead of the Brewers. I got a call from a guy that works in the organization that I'm close with, that said, if the Yankees trade for you, will you sign an extension right now? And I was like, nah, I want to wait and go to free agency. You know, I've played this long. I want to see, you know, what my market is. And he was like, all right, well, we'll just sign you in free agency. And then that's when I got traded to the Brewers the next day. So that was one of the, you know, I probably would have been the Yankee at the end of 08 or in the middle of 08 if I would have signed the extension.
How's your goal of looking like The Rock going?
Oh, man, it's going good. I'm excited. I love it. I just left the gym right now, man. I'm all in.
You look just like him, CC. You look just like him.
Well, you are wearing the funny thing about that is the people who can't see you because they're just listening to this might not know that you and Action Bronson have actually gotten into fairly extraordinary shape, and the both of you are you exercising more vigorously than you did as a player?
No, I'm just doing different exercises. You know, as a player, it was all about keeping my knee healthy, you know, balance, different things in my lower body. Now it's just I'm working out like I'm going to the beach every day. You know, it's curls and, you know, chest presses and different things where, you know, me and Action are in the gym having so much fun. I mean, he's down 165 pounds and, you know, just looking great. And he's such a good motivator and a great friend that we have fun, man. And it's been fun. This is something that all my teammates have known that I want to do. Like, as soon as I got done playing, I was, you know, going to try to get as jacked as possible. So I got, you know, to the end of this year to see how big I can get.
But at your worst, though, you were somebody, I remember this about you, it's almost like word association. I wonder if it's the same for Chris Cody as resident fat guys who enjoyed seeing the hefty guys succeed in sports. Easy. I remember the specifics. Well, no, he's going to, of you ate an enormous amount of cereal, right? You go through boxes a day.
I still eat a lot of cereal. It's just like gluten-free maple Cheerios and shit like that. It's not like Captain Crunch and stuff anymore.
But what did it used to be at your worst?
Oh, like, it was Captain Crunch. It was like a box. And I got a 10-year-old. It's hereditary because my 10-year-old can go through like three boxes of Captain Crunch right now. An animal.
Wait, what's your strategy with the Captain Crunch? You let it sit in the milk and get a little bit soggy?
You have to. You'd be all bloody up here. So you gotta let it sit for like 5 minutes and then go at it.
Thank you.
Yes. I've been saying it for years. No one agrees with me.
Okay. What else do you have for CC Sabathia other than thank you for eating cereal the same way?
Well, Action Bronson described the gym you guys went to as the torture chamber. Can you describe it for us?
Nah, it's a huge gym. My friend Dave Palladino owns a gym in Norwood, New Jersey called Impact Zone. And it's got everything, man. He's got literally every machine that you can think of. Like, I joke with him, I always call it Global Gym. Like, it's like, it's a huge gym. It's got physical therapy. It's got everything that we could ever want in there. And during the pandemic, you know, all the gyms were closed, but it was just me and Action in there and our trainer. So we would go in there and train during the mornings. And, you know, now that everything's kind of opening back up, we're back in there. He's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I go 5 days a week.
What are you trying to do with your clothing collection beyond? And if you want to look more like what CC is wearing in this interview, which you might like, rootsoffight.com is where you go. Are you trying to accomplish anything beyond being another athlete who has a brand that he likes?
Oh, no. I mean, Roots of Fight is a great brand that tells cool stories. You know, I hooked up with them 2 years ago to do the Negro League line. It was the 100th year of the Negro Leagues last year. And Roots of Fight, you know, they like I said, I mean, they just tell really cool stories with their clothing, whether it's, you know, Satchel Paige or Jackie Robinson or, you know, Rosa Parks or whoever. So for me to be able to come out with my own line and be able to tell my story, you know, where I came from and different things. It's fun, man. It's awesome. And just happy to be a part of it. And, you know, hope people really enjoy it.
How would you describe where you came from to people who don't know the story?
Where I came for me, where I came from is the place I grew up in, Vallejo. The neighborhood I grew up in is called The Crest. Safest place that I could have ever grown up. Probably not the safest place if you're not from there. But for me, you know, I rode my bike all through there. I mean, you know, my whole family's from there. I grew up, you know, some of the best athletes that I ever seen in my life came from that place. And, you know, for me, I'm just super proud to be from there. So to be able to have this, you know, hoodie and this clothing with, you know, my hometown and really my neighborhood represented on there is special to me.
How about the backstory of the Negro Leagues? How does that speak to you?
I mean, the Negro Leagues for me, you know, getting a chance to meet Buck O'Neill, my very first time going into Kansas City, 2001. You know, I'm walking past the cage and he was like, "Hey, big fella, I'm waiting for you." And I was like, "You waiting for me? Like, I'm, you know, I'm 20 years old. I had, you know, no idea he even knew who I was." But, you know, he told me that he wanted me to come to Negro League Museum the next morning, came and picked me up at the hotel. And, you know, I just kind of fell in love with the place. Just the connection that, you know, the direct connection that these guys have to me. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be able to live on my dream without some of these guys breaking the color barrier, going through the things that they went through. And, you know, the more I'm learning about the Negro Leagues, this is when I was younger, you know, I'm just understanding that this is not like some backyard baseball league. Like, this is a booming business that kept the dollar in the black community, you know, whether it was in Chicago, Indianapolis, New York, Newark, I mean, all over the place. These were big games and big things in our community. So the more and more I learned about how great these athletes was, the more and more I fell in love with the league.
CeCe, how'd you feel when you learned that Major League Baseball was pulling the All-Star game out of Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, that was a tough thing. I mean, it was, you know, obviously one of those things where, you know, you wanted the league to step up and have the players feel comfortable. You know, a couple of players voiced their opinion about going down there and playing. And, you know, you got to commend Rob and everybody for stepping up, for listening to their players and moving the game. This is one of those things where, you know, they're not reactive. You know, MLB's always reacting to things, and this is one of those things where they're kind of like the league, like the NBA, where they got out in front of this and, you know, and trying to do the right thing for their players.
What do you regard as your most emotional baseball moment?
Oh, man. I think that last moment, me walking off, you know, I think it's just a perfect way for me to end. I think if I didn't end ripping up my shoulder, I would be out in my backyard trying to throw bullpens right now because the Yankees need help in the starting pitch. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just the perfect way for me to go out. And in that moment, like, that's the only time I could ever remember, like, hearing the chants of the Yankee fans. And it was just in that one moment as I'm walking off and probably the most pain I've ever been in. And, you know, it was just the perfect way for me to go off. You know, everybody always like, "Man, it was just sad the way you went out and blah, blah, blah." But like, for me, it was just the perfect way. Like, I literally went until I couldn't anymore and, you know, walked off at my home field, like in front of my home fans. Like, I couldn't ask for a better ending.
Why the first time you heard the chants? You go to a different place mentally? Like, yeah, certainly they had chanted your initials and name before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, most of the time it's just noise. And in that moment, it was just, you know, I could hear the chants and, you know, I could hear people trying to rally me to throw that last pitch to see if I could, you know, go back out. And yeah, I mean, not the 11 years that I pitched in that stadium, I never ever heard like the chants of my name until that last time.
I understand the symbolism of it, but that's a super unusual answer because you had a great you had a great many successes, a great many emotional moments. You were a outwardly jubilant person. You're choosing the moment of your career that caused you physically the most pain, and I imagine emotionally the most pain.
But the chance, Dan.
But it was just, it wasn't even the chance. It was just the way it happened. Like, it was just me leaving it all out there. Like, that's what I want people to remember me as. Like, I literally left my shoulder out there in the Bronx, and that's what I want people to remember me by. That and being a good teammate. And you know, there's no other way to symbolize that.
Were Brett Gardner and Ted Lilly asshole pranksters? Like, do you have any?
I can't see Gardy being a prankster.
I never played with Lilly, but Gardy's an asshole. But he's funny, man. Like, he's hilarious. Like, when I tell you this guy's hilarious, like, I mean, just the, I mean, the level of like the depth that he would go to pull a prank. Like, we had this, our video guy back in the day, his name was Anthony Flynn, super cool guy. We all got along with him, but we would always, you know, give him shit different times, whatever. Him and Gardy would always go back and forth. Flynnie came in one day with a brand new GNC, had a brand new truck, Suburban. And Gardy takes his push to start ignition thing, slices it open, takes the battery out, and puts a small little tiny picture of himself in there.
No.
And like Flynnie's taking his car back to the dealership, like the shit won't work. He can't get the car unlocked. His wife's freaking out. He's going back and forth. They opened up the key thing as a picture of Gardy in there.
Man, you're making me like Gardy.
Rootsofflight.com, CC Sabathia. If you want to get behind the things that he believes in, rootsofflight.com. Thank you, CC. Good catching up with you.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, CC.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Light spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Light, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.